From page 173, chapter The Shangri-La of the Andes from the book UFOs, A Great New Dawn for Humanity of Enrique Castillo Rincon. Some headlines added, and some words translated, all pictures is just to illustrate. The next encounter. On the 23rd December, while sleeping at the hotel, where he had arranged a UFO course, a communication entered. The extraterrestrials ordered me to a certain place in the early morning, a few hours later. With such short notice, there was no opportunity to notify the people registered in the course. I got up, told the receptionist that I had to leave at 3 a.m., and asked him to please wake me up if I fell asleep. I was told not to bring a tape recorder or camera. The trip was going to last about 5 days. Where were they planning to take me for all that time? I thought the destination could be a nearby planet. Both excited and anguished, I hailed a taxi in front of the hotel. It was almost 3 a.m. We started for the town of El Junquito, a tourist location, before Colonia Tova, a picturesque town, high in the Venezuelan Andes, with many residents of German ancestry, which is about 25 kilometers from Caracas. There is a cut-off before Colonia Tova, at the road to Carioca. The driver, a Spaniard from Madrid, was a little reticent to engage in conversation at first, but finally we discussed various subjects. Arriving at the meeting place, I got out of the cab and paid him, adding an extra tip. It was 4:11 a.m. and cold. I walked another half kilometer on the road, and then into a ravine. I waited for the indicated hour. A craft suddenly materialized a few meters above ground level, swinging from side to side and projecting a tenuous light downwards. This one was the classic flying saucer, 6 or 7 meters in diameter and 3 meters high, including its dome. With an astounding symmetry in shape, it moved harmoniously, swinging smoothly in complete silence. The nocturnal darkness blended with the ghostly presence of the alien craft. It landed about 40 meters from where I stood, a tripod slid down, then a ladder was visible, and a navigator stepped to the ground. He signaled me to approach. I glanced at my watch. It was 4:27 a.m., on the 24th of December, 1974. While Cyril, who was the navigator who met me, and I greeted each other, he informed me that we were to visit a base in the Andes, where we were to receive the information promised during one of the telepathic contacts some months before. Cronulla and a stranger, whose name he told me but I have not been able to remember, were on board. While the craft flew, my first son with Gloria was being born in Bogota, which I learned later, through a telephone call I made from Caracas to Bogota on January 19, 1975. He was baptized Doan Yamaruk, born at 4:33 a.m. on December 24, 1974. Months afterwards, we recall Doan's words, when Gloria was less than 2 months pregnant, that he would be born between the 23rd and the 25th of December. How could he have known it with such accuracy? We arrived at our destination, a town in the middle of the high and millennial Andes of South America. I thought we were to arrive at a city, but it was a small town, with a good extent of land, as I would find out in a few hours. The flight took only 20 minutes. Thousands of kilometers in such a short time. Incredible. And as usual, I could not detect a single motion or discomfort. This time I was not sprayed as the previous times, when they did it for a kind of disinfection. I forgot to ask them why. While I mused, Cyril exclaimed, "Look, Enrique." Below were the majestic Andes, and, at the tip of one of the mountains, the arrangement of the buildings was clearly visible. Cyril told me that the inhabitants called this place the Vortex of the Andes. "What inhabitants?" I asked. Cyril answered, "Yes, Enrique. At the moment there are 318 people here, who for many years, even entire families, have been contacted and brought here voluntarily. Here they live, work, study, and learn. They are instructed about the great events that humanity will experience, the teachings of the law, so that it will prevail. Many of them will be trained to help when the moment arrives. Nobody will know who instructed them, and besides, nobody would believe them. It could even be dangerous for them. This place, at about 3,200 meters above sea level, is located between two great mountains that give natural protection against blizzards and frosts, and is known as Alto Peru, Peru Highlands. Picture of similar high place town, here Machu Picchu. I'm under the impression that the place is closer to Bolivia than to Peru. It was still dark when we landed. It was impressive to see how the disc flew closely between steep mountain slopes and then landed softly on a platform and slid into the mountain, perhaps through hydraulic means, penetrating in through a horizontal tunnel. After climbing down to ground level, we walked to an office, where I was asked to take off my sweater and shirt. What surprised me pleasantly was the temperature, about 16 degrees Celsius, similar to Bogota, where I had lived for many years. The next day I was able to verify this point. The people getting ready to give me a brief check up were not extraterrestrial, just ordinary people, except that they used some devices unknown to me. The first test was routine: heart, blood pressure, reflexes, lungs, vision, hearing, etc. They asked me my city of origin and consulted a listing. They wrote down something and asked me if I had with me tape recorders or cameras. I answered number. They asked me to take my watch off temporarily. They placed a yellow band on my left wrist, and the watch was moved to the right arm. At the end of the examination, another Terran took me to the room where I was going to live during my stay. When I went out, somebody followed us quickly. Apparently there had been a mistake. They explained that the wristband's color had to do with the type of food that I should eat. Finally, I was taken to my temporary bedroom, leaving the comfortable and well-ventilated underground tunnel through the point where we had entered. Once in my bedroom, I rested on a simple but comfortable bed. I thought I was going to see a city of the future, but the buildings were wooden, sort of Canadian-type cabins, with smooth and well-cut but rustic beams and boards. The floor of the corridor leading to the bedroom was polished wood. The great rectangular cabin had two rows of bedrooms, on both sides of its central passageway. I will omit other details to center on the essentials. Up to then, I thought that I was the only guest at the Vortex. When they announced breakfast, I had not slept. I was restless as to why I had been taken so far and to what mission I was to be assigned. It was 6:45 a.m., and I had been there almost 2 hours. The fellow who picked me up was surely of Incan descent. I followed him to the dining room. Surprise, six more people waited there, having arrived before me. Others would arrive in an hour or so. These contactees came from 19 different countries, and 11 were Latin. There was only one woman among us. There was an individual self-introduction, no names were given, just the countries of origin. Now I knew the meaning of the colored wristbands. All wore them, some different, some of similar colors. Each was to eat from the trays marked with the same color as the wristbands. Instructor number one, there were four, told us that the food had been prepared according to geographic zone. Their ionization was different, according to the elevation above sea level. This way it prevented illnesses from occurring on this account. Another difficult, too, handle aspect was the altitude. I was one of the four older visitors. Some received oxygen upon arrival, after which they felt okay. I felt a bit of sirish, altitude sickness. We were given warm, probably goat, milk, honey bread, and some delicious biscuits, freshly baked. The instructor called our attention from the head of one of the tables. I was sitting along one side of it. He gave us the reasons we were there. Each one would be given privileged information. The information should be treated with utmost care, and we were to be very careful as to who would receive it, either orally or in writing. Further serious recommendations were to be given to us later. The instructor told us that grave events were taking place in various fields, which would lead the planet to undergo, with its occupants, untoward experiences of several types. Our presence in that place had the objective of transmitting to the public, through various means, the occurrences that will take place and culminate in several momentous events. For personal reasons, I do not give out an account of the calamities announced by the instructors. They had information covering many years as to how the facts will unwind. They had a very clear picture of all this, known to all of the inhabitants of the vortex. The extraterrestrials, through documented and adequate scientific means, had transmitted this astounding information. And we were not given all the information. Some reports were not transmitted. Only in case of emergency would they be given, we were informed, through personal contact. The instructors subtly led us to understand, between the lines, as it were, that the Pleiadians would make the final decisions. We were told that the withholding of certain information from us at that time was intended to protect us from any danger. This dialogue took place by telepathic induction. The instructor told us that this was a technique obtained over several years of learning, because only one of the terrestrial instructors had natural abilities, which had been perfected by the extraterrestrials. This ended the presentation. Afterwards, we walked, enjoying the magnificent view from that fabulous place high in the Andes. We listened to the howling of the wind, clearly perceptible at some places, which was a bone-chilling temperature. We were able to see a great contraption projecting from the mountain, with fins and crystals. We were told that energy is thus captured for the whole community, and that there is another energy source for the appliances and lighting. One of the energy sources was used for powering a magnetic shield or camouflage of the base and its climate-controlled environment. I knew it, I could see it. It was an example of technology used for the benefit of all. We saw fields cultivated with legumes, strawberries, and other fruits. I had seen earlier some tropical fruits at the breakfast table and had wondered to myself about who provided them with oranges, pineapples, and coconuts. All was managed uniformly. The residents worked, studied, investigated, and learned. They knew history better than students at colleges and universities. I asked myself how I might adapt if I stayed on to live with them. There was time for leisure. Some slept, and others lounged in the convertible swinging chairs of the corridor of the great cabin. The aroma of chrysanthemums, violets, and forget-me-nots suffused the atmosphere with peace and quiet, as if the world had ground to a halt. Isolated from all haste and hassle, we felt we had entered a veritable Shangri-La. Lunch was delicious, composed of a great variety of legumes and greens, with fruit on top. The instructor told us to take a look at the spoons and eating utensils. They were wooden. He explained that each one should take the foods marked with the color of their wristband. Tomatoes and peppers were served whole, complete with the skin. When eating, we were to cut them with the wooden knives and do the same with the rest of the foods. We were told that when cutting them with a metal instrument, a chemical change takes place, producing a loss in the vitamin content. With the wooden knives, the complete content was preserved. "Wonderful," said some. It was announced that the following morning we would witness a special event. A very important being was to talk to us. We should just listen. The whole population of the base would be present. The speaker was not identified. The announcement was repeated until the information was clear. We retired to exchange views of all kinds. The Mexican doctor was very cheerful, even funny. With others we communicated through sign language and a little English. It was a rather laughable situation. Among the Latins, only with the two Brazilians did we have a little trouble language-wise. In the afternoon, fully rested, I was called from my room by the same native that I had met upon arrival. He took me to a pleasant, small living room. Cyril entered smiling, and we greeted each other as old friends. He was not wearing a uniform, just cotton trousers, a sporty shirt, and a wool sweater. "Come here, Enrique, sit here," he said, pointing to a chair. "It was 5 p.m. Take some paper and write what I am going to dictate." On a table there were paper, ballpoint pens, and pencils. Six more contactees arrived. "It is up to you whether or not to divulge what we are teaching you. If you don't, you will not be blamed." The instructions were the same for all. All seven contactees took up paper and pens and got ready to listen to the dictation. This was the message dictated by Krishnamurti from the Pleiades, scientist and liaison officer on Earth, member of the Great Solar Cosmic Brotherhood, at 5 p.m., on the 24th of December, 1974, message to the world, planner in its three phases, to all the inhabitants of the planet called Earth, to all my beloved brothers, whatever their organ, color, or social condition, to all those who cannot yet listen to or understand the voice of Eternal Truth, we announce to you a better world, where a new mind will prevail and take you to true spiritual love, where you will live in the true science of the spirit, light, law for the children of the planet, where all the opponents of the great cosmic plan